Okay, and we are back. And I would urge you all to go to the top at Rents.com. Look at the first featured story up there. It's Las Vegas, and we keep adding things to it. I do, as soon as I get them. And if they're worth looking at, there are thousands of stories now on YouTube. And I'm trying to pick the ones that are most relevant. I miss some, and to those of you who are really serious researchers, I apologize. I can only look at so many. And the numbers I've found are quite impressive. Just to read some of the titles off to you, Radar Analysis of Helicopters During the Massacre. Now, this is an extraordinary video, and the gentleman who did it did a fine job. He got the official radar records and tracked Maverick helicopters, one of which vanished as it was in the area of Mandalay Bay. I mean, right there at the area. The other ones apparently kept going on their nightly 10 p.m. departure tourist trek around the valley. And there were two other helicopters, Sunset, something like that, helicopter service, which weren't involved. We do think at this point that Maverick helicopters, we don't know, we can't prove it, but it is highly suggestive, according to the radar analysis, that one of the Maverick helicopters was involved somehow with this horrific event in Las Vegas, which is certainly being swept further and further away from the news cycle. We had the New York disaster, then we had the Texas massacre. We're going to talk about the fellow involved with that. But a couple of the other stories you want to be sure and look at. Now, I had a story up. Google took it down. It was a short video, 40 seconds or so, of someone taking a random pan during the commotion, the chaos, the fright, the death, the dying of the skyline, and near the Mandalay Bay, in fact, to the right of it, in between that and the Delano Tower, is a helicopter. First, it's flying screen right as we look at it, then it turns and it flies screen left, and during both directions, there is a clear and unmistakable, inarguable muzzle flash going off below and to the nose area of the helicopter. I would suggest a 3 to 4 foot barrel, perhaps a pod mounted underneath it. I don't think it was a machine gunner at a door. They do have underbody mounts. 30 cal is common, but this had a long barrel, and you can see the fire. It's fire is what it is. The gunpowder explodes, it burns, it goes out to the barrel. That's what a muzzle flash is. You can see it. Google took it down, so I put up a sign, Google took this video down, shows muzzle flashes from copter next to Mandalay Bay. Does anyone have a copy? We were able to find another copy at another URL, and I've got someone who has already downloaded it, Hanny, our audio guy, and I'm going to pull out that section. It's the first 12 seconds, and it shows the helicopter. I'm going to have him run it over and over again, enlarge it, run that over and over again, so you can see exactly what that is. And then there's another analysis in print, Las Vegas machine gun fire from helicopter. Another one, Las Vegas flight records reveal military grade air assault and extraction all possible. Now, the first person to talk about an air extraction was my guest and colleague this hour and a half, Gary Holland, who lives in Las Vegas, and he was the man who put this together. Now, we did get early videos of sound of helicopters going overhead. I don't necessarily think they were anything necessarily evil. They could have been the Sunset, I think it's Sunset helicopters, but they take tours as well. They were flying back home, which is would have been to the east of Janet Air, where they're based. At least that's where Maverick is based. And we've got clear evidence of a helicopter going off radar, transponder shut down, and then when it comes back on, it's giving a false ID, which is an FAA crime, of an airliner supposedly flying in from Tulsa or something to confuse controllers, I guess. But we've got all the stories up there that you want to see, that you need to see, and I urge all of you, if you haven't availed yourself of them, by all means, take a look. Gary, it gets uglier and darker all the time, doesn't it?
Well, it's getting worse and worse as it goes along. Like I said, with the helicopters, I do believe that the extraction, which I still believe at the Delano, or even in the top five floors of Mandalay, which is actually the Four Seasons.
We could call it Saudi Arabia 2.0, too, couldn't we?
Saudi Arabia. Yeah, UAE, Saudi Arabia, you know, all the same. And that was actually the command. That would have been the command center, because you got a perfect view of the operation going on. You're running the operation at the same time. You probably would, like I said, the one helicopter was for extraction. I still say that one helicopter we've seen that was, like I said, in between New York, and Excalibur above Tropicana was firing on the oncoming squad cars that were coming in from, you know, different directions. And that was just to, you know, get them, you know, the slow down.
They were laying down suppressing fire to slow down the emergency response.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And so then you had the extraction of the command center, and them guys were, you know, that would be the first ones. Obviously, they're the most important people. They were the planners, and they were the insiders. They were the ones who needed to be extracted first. And then, like I said, the ground sweeper, which is the ones that were on the ground that were shooting, keep repeating, they went to Jan Adair. And that's where you know it's very high up in this government of what was going on. For them to have access to Jan Adair, that's beyond top secret. You have to have, like, the top secret clearance to get even into Janet Air, because Janet Air flies to Area 51, but it also flies to Hill Air Force Base. It flies to a various different, also top secret sites.
Tonopah, China Lake. Yeah.
Tonopah, China Lake. And them are just the known ones. But they also fly to certain other areas where you don't know about. And one of them is actually up in NORTHCOM, which is another flight that I've been made aware of.
That's the first I've heard of that. They do fly to NORTHCOM. Interesting how they use Las Vegas as a base, I guess, to quarter and house a lot of these people who work in above top secret positions and fly them from Vegas. Interesting.
Which is why Area 51 was set up. Area 51 is probably, there's some stuff going on up there, but it's mostly fantasy. That's why, look, the fact of the matter is, if they didn't want you to know about Area 51, you never would have knew about Area 51. They wanted you to know about Area 51 for a reason, because it's the old magic. Well, what do they do best here in the town here? Well, the magicians. You know, that's what they are, magicians. It's a sleight of hand. You know, you see what the right hand doing, which is Area 51, the left hand, you don't know what it's doing, because that's what they want.
There was supposedly another area something that was built years ago, and I believe it was Utah somewhere. I've forgotten the designation of it. I think it was Utah. Yeah. There was another one.
And a lot of the top secret Air Force stuff that goes on nowadays, that's been going on for a very long time, is Wright-Patterson in Ohio.
Yeah.
That's, you know, you will, there's parts of Wright-Patterson that nobody's allowed into. And, you know, and I've had theories even where one of the 9/11 flights, you know, and the magical flights that went into the buildings and they were still, you know, existing. I still think one or two of the flights ended up at Wright-Patterson Air Force Base, and that's where the people were extinguished or had already been extinguished, whatever you want to
call
it.
There was another base. There was another base. Where was it? Was it New York, a closed Air Force Base or a semi-closed Air Force Base? Or an out-of-the-way airport when they had these planes, two or three of them, and they took them off the runway to another end of the base. And, they were probably all dead by then with nerve gas in the in the plane.
Yeah, because if you remember, there was like one or two of the flights that had been on Cleveland. I think it was Cleveland radar.
Cleveland, correct. And it was on the ground at Cleveland. Yeah.
And on the ground at Cleveland, but you also, if you look really close to Cleveland, it's Wright-Patterson Air Force Base. And so, you know, like I said, they would use a top secret, you know, getting off track here. But it's same as Janet Air. Janet Air is a very high top secret site, and right in front of your eyes. I mean, you drive by that terminal area. And this area, you drive by there, you wouldn't really know, unless you know what you're looking for, you have no clue. It just looks like a bunch of corporate, you know, hangers, where just a bunch, you know, like rich cats, fat cats come in to go gambling, or some of the corporate heads of the local, you know, casinos and companies here in town use. you know, Janet Air is a very, it's just a really plain looking place. But if you try to go near it, you'll see that it says, you get the big warning signs, United States Air Force facility, you know, violations, you know, you get the whole, you know, the whole thing,
right.
But you don't go near that place because right in the parking lot, even on, you can even do this. You can, people can just look right on Google Maps and do the street view. There's a portable tower right there where with Air Force security with M60s. Now they have full machine guns, mm-hmm. and they have full firepower. They're sitting there. Mm-hmm. You won't get near that place.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, like I said, you have Maverick Air, which was, like I said, which they would have used a tour company. It would make sense. Now, would any of the Maverick Air employees know about it? No. Maybe they had one guy in there that they planted, because one of these things they do too, you gotta understand, like say they were going to use Maverick Air, maybe they needed one of their dispatchers or whoever, they would have got him in there a year ago as just going in there under a cover of being an employee, but that employee was going to definitely be working that night.
Yeah,
you can guarantee that. So yeah. That's what ended up happening. So this way, he misdirected any pilots that, you know, the pilots and the tour company, you know, and the clerks and all the people that work there. They were distracted and stuff like that, and didn't know anyway. And you know where they're, you know, because also you got to remember McCarran was shut down. So I don't know what Mavericks is. No one's ever asked them, and I don't think they'll ever give you the truth. But no one even knows what Maverick, the tour helicopters that were up in the air at the time they shut down McCarran, what happened to them? Because as far as I know, they weren't allowing any incoming or outgoing flights.
Right.
So, and that's including helicopter. So right. did they divert Maverick
supposedly,
helicopters over
according
to
this,
Las Vegas airport?
Yeah, according to the
Henderson executive.
According to the top video here, they did go back to their Maverick base and land around 10:20, 10:30. I've forgotten. This is a very good video. It's a top video. It's called The Dark Helicopter by Truth Tracker. Let me just for fun play a little bit of this so you get an idea. And I would urge all of you to go. It may sound a little dry, but this guy has really done his homework on radar and what's what.
Currently looking at McCarran Airport.
So we're looking at an aerial view
here
of McCarran.
Here.
It's a top video. You'll see it.
And the Delano and the Luxor are right here. Now, I'm going to play this back from 9:37 p.m. It says 0437, but it's 9:37 p.m., the night of the Las Vegas shooting, and I'm going to hit play. It jumps straight to 9:38 p.m., 9:39 p.m., 9:40 p.m., and we have a helicopter taking off.
Now, what this is showing is all the McCarran air traffic, planes leaving, planes landing, and it's showing now the helicopters taking off from their location. There are two companies. One is Sunset or Sunrise, something like that, and then the suspect company is Maverick, owned by a 68-year-old ex-military man, and it sounds like perfect central casting. Here we go.
N854MH. We have a second helicopter taking off. N858MH. And one appeared right in between them. If I can click it.
Those are tour guides. They're taking people up to fly them around.
N848MH. It was.
These are,
I wasn't able to click
identified
it right there,
by radar.
I'm going to show you it in a second anyway. So those three helicopters go up the strip and circle back. We're going to see them come right in here. Comes the first one, N854MH. Departure at 21:38, arrival 21:51. So, right now that helicopter landed behind Mandalay Bay, according to radar. I don't understand that. Then we have our second helicopter.
That's according to radar. It went down or hit the rooftop there and did something. It stopped at Mandalay Bay. That's radar. U.S. government.
You read earlier. N858MH took off at 21:40 and lands at 21:53. That's in 2 minutes. which would be behind Mandalay Bay here. I'll show you. Then we have
2153 is 9:53 p.m., 7 to 10 minutes before the shooting starts. So you got two helicopters landing in the vicinity of Mandalay Bay, say, let's just say 10 minutes before the shooting starts. All right?
As I said, third helicopter, Maverick helicopter, N8 or 8MH. Takeoff time, 21:41. Landing time, 22:27.
That's 10:27.
Now, isn't that strange? N848MH flies with these tour helicopters to the same place as them, but lands over 20 minutes from now. Does not land at the same time as these other Maverick helicopters. See, 21:53. That's in 2 minutes, and the other one landed at 21:51 right now. 21:51. So it's already landed. So if it's an error in radar, why does this one say 22:27? That would be 10:27 p.m. Now, another thing, strange thing I noticed. Now, I made a video earlier today and sent it out to some people who I've been doing research with. And in the video, it shows that these times correlated, the arrival time and departures time correlated to the graph down here. 0451 would be up here for departure, for landing, or not this helicopter, but say this said 0451, like the first helicopter that you can't see anymore disappeared because it landed right here according to radar. I don't think it landed right here. I think it landed at the airport, but for some reason it disappeared right here. If this said 04...
Would that be transponder shut off, Gary?
Yeah, definitely.
Okay, definitely. So...
But see, now the other thing some of them tour helicopters only have just been flying over the strip in the city. They do that.
That's
There's
right.
other ones where I've told you where they fly for some odd reason. They fly out to Hoover Dam at night, and they fly out even out towards Grand Canyon at
night. Can't figure that one.
It's stupid. Yeah, people like to see that stuff at night. They must like see the dam lit up. I don't know why they do, but they like to go out there sometimes, and they do have a tour that goes out at night in the evening, you know, and they fly out that way. So if you had two helicopters go out and then come back fast, that was probably just the city tour. But if you had one showing up a little bit later, that could possibly be the flight coming in from that went out to Hoover Dam, because, you know, like I said, they go to different directions. But the transponders, they would definitely have the transponders off. They'd be going in dark. They wouldn't be
right.
Going in lit up. And the other thing, they would be, like I said, they're mixing in with the regular Maverick helicopters.
That's right.
So you really don't, you ain't going to know exactly where, which, you know, which one's what and which one's doing what.
Now, I want to ask, go ahead.
They closed at 10:50 p.m. McCarran was shut down at 10:50. And then they started resuming, because I read it here online. They started resuming restricted, just right before 1 a.m., limited operations were beginning again. But they said that the passengers should expect delays. And this was, was written at the time it was going live. So you're talking, I'm 10:50 to right before 1. That's about 2 hours. They closed the airport down. There still should have been some of the tour helicopters up in the air still during that time when they shut it down. So I'm wondering, where did they divert them helicopters to? Because there's two other airports they could, you know. So you can understand. There's three other airports in just this valley. Well, in this area, right alone, you have Henderson Executive, Boulder City, and North Las Vegas, and McCarran Airport. Hmm. Now, North Las Vegas is, there's helicopters that are coming out of there all the time. Some of them are Civil Air Patrol. some is with Metro. Their helicopter fleet is out of North Las Vegas Airport. And then Henderson Executive Airport has small planes that go in and out of there, and also helicopters that fly in and out of there, too. And some of them are MedFlight helicopters. I think the company that has the MedFlights is based out of Henderson Executive over that way. Then Boulder City is another tour airport. So what I'm wondering is, where are these helicopters diverted to? Now, when you look at it, I think, like I've said before, they landed at Maverick area. Now, that would have been the confusing point. Say they would have said, well, them helicopters landing at Maverick, right, thinking that they were the tour helicopters, when in reality these were teams that were being extracted. And then, of course, as you remember, McCarran reported on the tarmac and on the flight lines of armed gunmen. Okay, that report went out more than one, yeah. And I've heard that from a lot of other people. And then these guys were just going across from Maverick, and they just skipped, it's a skip and a jump, and then they're right at Janet Air, which someone would be waiting there to let them in. So, these are all things, it's all speculation, of course, but that would be the likely scenario. Now, the ones up in the air, they might have been diverted for a temporary time over to, North Las Vegas Airport or Henderson Airport. And I would like to know if they were, because that would give a little bit more better detail what Maverick was doing. And the other one was Sundance Tours, because they're called
Sundance.
One you're thinking of. It's Sundance, yeah.
Yeah.
And Sundance is over that way, too. So what did they, because I was looking at this guy's video, and there wasn't that many tour helicopters coming in. It was like, I think, two, and then one was landed
correct.
Behind Mandalay
two,
Bay.
Two Sundance, and then, yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Hold on. We have to break. Look for the video. It's one, two, third one down. Urgent, we found the short version of the copter muzzle flash video. That's the one you want to look at. Only the first 12 seconds actually shows it. Now I'm going to isolate that, pull that segment out, and repeat it and enlarge it for you. It should be up hopefully tomorrow morning. But you'll be able to see clearly. These aren't strobes. They're strobes on top. These are muzzle flashes, no question whatsoever. It sweeps to the right as you look at the screen, then it sweeps back to the left, and then the camera operator turns the smartphone cam away to another location. Okay, look at that one, and then look at the first video, and think about the missing helicopter. Where did it go? Did it land by Mandalay, or did it shut off its transponder and continue flying? It became invisible to radar. That doesn't mean it wasn't flying or wasn't doing things. And I think we may have put two and two together here. Hold on, and we'll be right back. Jeff Rentz with Gary Holland, and we're talking about Las Vegas, the biggest story of them all. And you can tell that by virtue of the fact that it is no longer even noticed by the controlled, rotten mainstream media. It has been swept away. There are multiple reasons for that. When we talk about I remember Campos and his talking about how the upstairs stairwell door was somehow it was made inoperable with some kind of an iron plate or a steel plate with a couple screws into the door frame or the door jamb. The door couldn't open outside of Paddock Suite. Stephen Paddock's suite was right there. He walked out the front door, turned right, he goes right into the stairwell. Well, that door could not be opened from down below on the 31st floor coming up. you had to go up the elevator and walk over to the stairwell, which is what Campos allegedly does. He walked in through the door and saw that the inner door to the stairs itself going down was inoperable. It had been made inoperable with a steel plate and a couple of screws into the door jamb. So that was shut. Well, what does that mean? Think about it this way. Campos walks away, allegedly. Now we're hearing that he was either shot in the thigh, but not with bullets. He was hit with either two or three bullet fragments now. That's what they're saying. That's the latest. So they're not bullets. They were fragments. Fragments of what? They're saying bullets, but can they prove it? Was he even hit at all? I don't know. But let's just say that Campos walks down the hall. They do shoot at him. The people coming out of Paddock's room, a couple of people having executed him, having set the room up to look like it was a suicide and a crime scene and all that, but they made some huge mistakes. Look at the photo analysis that I put up for one. You can see that. So they come out the door. Campos is hiding. Where are they going to go? Are they going to walk down the hall to get the elevator past Campos? No, they're going to turn right immediately outside that door, go into the stairwell. Are they going to go down? No, they can't, because the door has been fixed so nobody coming up can get onto the 32nd floor. So what does that leave them? The only option they have is to go where? Up. What's up? The top five floors of the Mandalay Bay, including the Four Seasons, are owned by the Royal Family of Saudi Arabia. Get the picture. 120 plus Muslim employees in the hotel, 11,000 Muslims in Las Vegas living in a community, and they stay virtually by themselves, I'm told. Do you think there might have been some support for this operation in that group? I think you better think that there were. So these guys, one or two that had killed, in my view, potentially, speculation, Paddock, come out the door, maybe fire a couple shots at Campos, turn right, I mean, within three steps, they're turning right into this door that goes into the stairwell. They go upstairs to the top. You don't even get into the top. That's Saudi Arabia. Might as well be the Saudi embassy in Washington, D.C. You don't get in there. They go up there. They put on a waiter's jacket or a busboy jacket. They blend into the scenery, or they get pulled off the roof via helicopter extraction. There's a potential for you to think about. Gary, go ahead.
Yep, that's exactly what they would have did, especially the kill team for that. For Paddock, poor guy, you know, look, the fact of the matter is he was dead the minute he walked into that room. He more than likely, he might even, like I said, I still say he smuggled. And my theory is that, you know, whoever his handler was, double-crossed him. Not only did they double-cross him, they used the guy to smuggle the weapons in, basically, that they used for this. And then they got two for one with this guy. They made him the patsy at the same time. It was all part of the planning from the very beginning. And so whatever Paddock did to double-cross somebody, you know, maybe he was trying to inform, maybe he got greedy and started doing his own side deals. Who knows? You know, you don't double-cross these people, you know, and Paddock should have knew that, especially, you know, because sometimes you work for these people for so long, and you get, it's like having an old comfortable shoe on. You think that, well, you know, I know all about the inside and outs of doing this, and I've been with these people for a long time, so what I'll do is I'll do a little side action, and they'll never find out, because I know the in and out, I know how these people operate, and I know what to do to stay under their radar. But you don't. They're always have an eye on you. They, you know, so he made the classic mistake. He went upstairs. As soon as he entered the room, it was goodbye. He passed on to the afterlife.
Now,
there was an explosion that was overheard in his room or whatever. That's when the windows were blasted out, by the way.
Uh-huh.
They were blasted out. They were blasted.
So they put a little charge on the glass and a little shape charge and blew them out. Okay. All right. Now, here's something else. When we look at the picture of Paddock's body on the ground, on his back, with his arms at his sides, and you can tell you can only see one, his left arm. You know the right arm is at his sides, too. Simply look at the shoulders. You can see where the shoulder bones and the upper arm bones. They're right at the side on both of his angles. Now, if, in fact, he was shot as soon as we think he was, which was basically immediately, he goes down, he bleeds. The one or two people who killed him take off, go upstairs, and I think that's where they went, frankly. I don't think they went down, I think they went up. He didn't die. Let's say he didn't die. Somehow he was shot, and this happens, and the body stays alive. Oh, his brain's trashed, but his heart's still beating. Maybe he's laying there. Maybe he's moaning. Maybe he's still alive. That would explain, and it's the only thing I can come up with that would explain the pool of blood on the right when you look at the picture that has all but vanished compared to the pool of blood on the left, an entirely different pool of blood, which is new, it is thick, it is fresh, it is red. You got two different bleed times, in my view. And I think what happened was that when the cops or whoever went in there, maybe it was FBI, I don't know, but they might have found Paddock still alive. And remember, a month later, Lombardo admits that an officer's weapon discharged once or more in Paddock's suite. Maybe they had to take him out and finish the job. That would have explained the second heart pump bleed out and the fresher pool of blood. When you look at that picture, you tell me if you don't see two different bleed outs. That's another angle.
Yeah, and I got a theory on that. They could have, that might have been, he might have been, you know how when you're dead, you're almost dead, you're still, you got that snore, that dead snore, they call it.
Death rattle.
And they probably might have planted another round in his skull, whatever. But he, the other big reasons why that Metro cop blew his gun off in that room, so the FIT team could come in and be the lead investigating unit. Let me explain what happened. A lot of people don't know this. Metro Homicide is not even a part of this investigation at all. They've been X'd out.
They're out of it.
There was a retired Metro and detective on a local talk show here. The talk show host interviewed her. She said she had been in contact with multiple homicide detectives with Metro Homicide. They told her, we're not even part of the investigation. The FIT team is. What is the FIT team? Well, the FIT team's called, it stands for the Force Investigation Team. They set up the FIT team a few years ago because of so many officer-involved killings here in town. So they set up what they called the FIT team, which is basically comes under internal affairs. So the FIT team has no one that, as a matter of fact, not the Metro Homicide has 24 detectives. FIT team has 6 detectives. Out of them 6 detectives on the FIT team, not one has any homicide experience at all.
Wow.
Zero.
Wow.
And as a matter of fact, this detective said that the FIT team, which is basically Lombardo loyalists, okay, you have the Metro Homicide has only been for very specific questions, and she said the questions were basically how to do thing questions, have been consulted on this case. They haven't been consulted at all on this case, except for, well, how do you do this? How do you do that? Basic information things, but nothing specific to the shooting itself. That's been handled 100% by the FIT team, and to this day, it's still being handled by the FIT team, and they will not give it up. Courtney Lombardo, there was a local interview here. He said the FIT team had to be in charge because they took in charge of this whole investigation. Now, you tell me this. And the reason why he gave is because the Metro cop had accidentally discharged his weapon, okay, in the room. So there's two things on this. What goes to what your theory is, Jeff? If he just accidentally shot off and just went into the wall, there would be no need for the FIT team. Because the FIT team is only for officer-involved shootings.
Correct.
Meaning,
yeah,
they shot somebody. So who did they shoot? For the FIT team to be not only the lead investigation on this, because see, that's a pretty big stretch. You're basically saying the FIT team, which is basically internal affairs who investigates officer-involved shootings.
Yeah.
How does that? How do you stretch that investigation team into all the shootings? Exactly. They won't even explain reason why.
No.
And, you know, I have to say one other thing. George Knapp, I don't understand why he got duped by I thought he was better than that. But that softball interview he did on Channel 8, was, and a lot of, you know, this is inside baseball stuff here in town. But you go online. I challenge anyone to go on Channel 8. It's, I forgot, Las Vegas Now, I think their website is. And look at George Knapp's interview with Lombardo. And it's all contrived questions that were probably handed to George Knapp right before the interview.
Oh, they were handed to Lombardo, too, before. Yeah. Of course.
Oh yeah, these were definitely scripted questions and scripted answers.
Yeah.
And how George Knapp fell for that? Because George Knapp is a on certain things has been a really decent investigative reporter. And the only reason why I would say they would use George Knapp is because he gave, I guess, would give some type of legitimacy to that interview. Because
that's exactly why. That's exactly why. I know George. He's better than that. But he's in the middle of something, and he's not going to buck the system. He's been there forever. It's just not going to happen.
And, you know, one other thing, Jeff, is what really has been getting me, it's burning me under the collar, is that the public in general should be up in arms about this. They should be demanding answers, and they're just not. I mean, you got with all this stuff with the basically the Keystone Cop, the complete disaster of investigation. The family's victims aren't even saying much, which you know then that this only confirms what we've been saying.
Yeah.
How they've been threatened to basically for under like that report I had sent you from a couple of
national
nurses.
Security. If you say anything, this is a national security issue.
You're interfering with an investigation involved national security. So that's being the threat is being spread.
And then they'll also possibly, we're speculating here, they'll also possibly mention, and if you help us and protect our national security, and you get to a point where there's a settlement discussion down the road, we will make sure we do our best to let them know, the insurance companies, that you've been helpful to us. These people are going to be paid off.
Oh, there is. And there's precedence for this. If you remember right, and to this day, I want someone to give me an answer on this. Why did the United States government give the victims, supposedly Dylann Roof, who went in and shot them people in Charleston in that church?
Right.
Why did the United States government give their families millions of dollars each? Why is it the obligation of the United States government to pay their families millions of dollars? I mean, Dylann Roof was a private citizen.
Why is the government involved?
Just went in and murdered some people. Why did the United States government give millions of dollars to these people and no one questions it? And, you know, the fact of the matter is, Jeff, you got to look at this. The general public, I'd say about now, I'm looking at 90% of this country, is in bad shape. Tonight you had basically people on TV cheerleading because the AIPAC party had another clear victory in the election tonight. First of all, their elections it's safe to say at this point, voting is just basically ceremonial.
It's an old, dead, haggard ritual is what it is. It means nothing.
You're just wasting your time voting.
Yeah.
So you have the AIPAC party. They're saying this one's what it's the AIPAC party. It doesn't matter who won tonight. It's the AIPAC party. It's a one-party system. And people are falling for it every time. You see, the scariest people are the ones, like, they're, like, literally in a fervor, excited that their candidate got in. And you know what they're excited about, Jeff? I'll tell you what these people, the ones that work for these campaigns, are excited about. They want to be part of the thievedom of the candidate who got elected. They don't care about the people because they care less about them.
The ones who work for the meat off the carcass want to be part of the thievedom.
Exactly. Yeah. They're not there to help people, regular Joe, you know, mom and pop out. They're excited that their candidate won because they think they're going to get a job in the thievedom. They want to be a part of it. That's all it's about.
Really good point. That's why
you don't see the general public should be mad about this. I mean, I don't understand it. Why they're not? There's not no protest. I mean, I understand the employees being threatened. Someone, one's law being threatened. You know, it's very lame, but I guess you know they don't want to go to jail. that's what they think. Or the families got paid off. But what about the general public? People that I tell this to, Joe private citizen, who's been lied to, know they're being lied to, not even just a little bit of lies to try to make the investigation go along. They know they are blatantly being lied to and won't be in front of the Metro headquarters saying, we demand answers. They're not at the city hall down during public when they have, you know, the city and county meetings. You know, they have us anytime they have the county and city meetings here, they have a time and I think every city is like this. But here they do at the end, which is basically an open time where you can go up to the podium and speak your mind to your public official. Nobody goes up to these public officials and starts asking, why are you not demanding more information from Metro on the shootings? They won't. There's nobody. It's like the blinders went on, everybody, and they just went back to sleep.
They're blinders. There's also a fear element. There's also the I don't want to get involved element. There's a lot going on psychologically to keep people from doing what you're thinking they ought to be doing, and you're 100% right. By the way, that the George Knapp interview with Lombardo, Lombardo was so laid back, so in charge, and he was back to his old self. He wasn't this nervous wreck, emotional wreck with FBI agent Rouse drooling and leaning over his shoulder. Lombardo was there. It was all scripted, as you say. Totally.
Yep.
Totally. Now,
completely scripted.
Yeah. Let me say one other thing. This is another aspect to this. And my feeling is, because of the number of Muslims in Las Vegas, 11,000, and well over 100 working in the Mandalay, and maybe other tangential services as well, you got to think that a large percentage of those people are radicals, radicalized. You have to. It's percentages. It's what they are. Now, let's rewind a little bit. Who created ISIS? We did. And our Israeli AIPAC masters. We did. Who supported them? We did. Who supplied them? We did. Who left them to swing in the wind when Putin and Russia went into Syria and started annihilating them? We did. Same thing in Iraq. We, in their minds, betrayed them. They're not happy about that. There's a lot of resentment there. And I will not rule out, in my mind, the potential that the majority, not all, the majority of this operation was carried out by ISIS killers who are easily dissolved into any community of Muslims in any city in this country and are there. And I think that's why we have to look upstairs to the Saudis, who are running ISIS as well. They're all part of the same mechanism. And I think there's a possibility, Gary, that this is like a Fast and Furious. And Mr. Paddock, Stephen Paddock, was working an arms deal with ISIS, not knowing that the feds had put in GPS trackers or some other kind of little teeny tiny mechanism in these weapons so they could track them and follow them. In other words, they were tainted goods. And if ISIS had found out about that in advance, this could have been easily their revenge. Slaughtering Americans, taking out Stephen Paddock. It works. It's a patsy. So I don't know. This is another possibility. A fast and furious operation that Paddock was involved with, and these weapons having some kind of electronic marker on them that could be tracked, followed, or otherwise identified later on. I don't know. But I know ISIS is not happy that they were basically left to be liquidated by the Russians in Syria, which is what happened. And same thing in Iraq. They're all gone. They're on the way out. So that's a factor. The Muslim community in that town is a factor. And yet this couldn't have been, you think in your own mind, done without the knowledge of NORTHCOM and Mossad. Probably correct. But what if the majority of it was done somehow under the radar out of revenge within the Muslim community? What would that do to DHS, the FBI, to NORTHCOM, to anybody who really cared about security in this country. That would shock them to the bone. And that would be another reason why they'd want this to go away. I may be totally wrong, but that's just another angle to think about.
Yeah, you know, they could have used it on the lower level operatives, you know, to get them pumped up and say, you know, this is a revenge factor.
But that's right. That's
right. The fact of the matter is, ICE, the running joke about ISIS is it's called the Israeli Secret Intelligence Service, because it is.
I know.
The fact of the matter is, the movers and shakers that worked with ISIS, that did the planning for ISIS, were the financiers of ISIS, were the upper level of ISIS. They were extracted from Syria a very long time ago. They or were never even in, and maybe had probably never even been in Syria. Usually run out of London and all these different types of cities.
The low level guys,
like the ones they had on the ground, they were expendable. Look, they could care less than people died. They don't care nothing about them people. And most of them are third century mentally ill, you know,
Stone Age killers.
Dummies. So yeah. that's your main ISIS killers on the ground in Syria.
Yeah.
The planners, just like Al-Qaeda and all these guys were heavily, heavily CIA and Mossad, and their assets, or even right out agents. So, you know, these guys, man, I'm telling you, they might, like I said, they, especially like the regular Muslim community here in town, the waiter, the guy at the mosque, the local, you know, schmo. You know, you get a guy that comes in there, just like, by the way, if you got to look at something, you want to look how they operate. If you look at that story about Harvey Weinstein, he was Mossad agents, and one of the Mossad agents pretended to be a victim of his and walked around and tried to get other women to hide their stories about him.
I know.
And,
I read that today.
So what do you do? You get a provocateur, goes into a mosque. I was with ISIS. I was fighting, for the Brotherhood, and I was fighting the Jihad, and I was fighting for the Caliphate in Syria. And they sound legitimate and great. And then what they do is they rile up the locals. You know, we're going to do an operation, and we're going to do this operation, and we don't. And of course, Muslims don't tell nobody anything because, you know, according to the Quran,
that's right.
You know, if somebody in your mosque says, "I'm going to go blow up this tomorrow." If you go say anything, you're a traitor to Allah.
You're dead.
There is no moderate Muslim. Let's stop with this foolishness about the moderate Muslim. The moderate Muslim is like I told you before, Jeff.
Yeah.
The moderate Muslim holds you down while the extremist cuts your throat.
Exactly.
So there is no moderate Muslim. There's no peaceful Muslim. There's no such a thing. It's ridiculous. It's just all lies to for you to accept these people in here. And so, of course, the low levels, like I said, would be your third team and the distract teams. You know, and doing, you know, and be the also wouldn't just be primary team. Also, you have support people, the ones who could get these guys up to the four, the upper five, fifth, you know, the upper floors of Mandalay, which is the Four Seasons.
That's right.
Support staff that looks, that puts the camera, unplugs, you know, does something to the camera, does or whatever. You know, these are a lot of, you need support people. And they're not going to say nothing because then they're running to the local mosque thinking, you know, they did something. And
exactly.
Make them all feel good about themselves.
That's right. Hold on, Gary. I got to do a break here. Hold on. Good points, every one of them. Stand by. We'll be right back to bring you up to date. And again, we are speculating, but we're working on the basis of having assimilated an awful lot of information. And we're still working through it. There's much more to come. Be right back. Welcome back. Thursday night, David Icke will be back. Been a friend for getting on close to 30 years now. David will be back. He has a brand new book out. And this book may be the most important book that he has written in a long, long time. He has, as you know, a lot of unhappy memories about last summer's tour when he tried to speak all across Canada, and the Zionists made damn sure that everybody who was going to host him was intimidated to the extent that he had only two of his engagements that were allowed to actually go on because the people putting them on stood up to the Jewish Zionist lobby and told them to go to hell. We're going to go ahead and do this. Now, his new book, I've got it on my homepage. You'll see it on the left. It's Everything You Need to Know But Have Never Been Told. That's the title. Everything You Need to Know But Have Never Been Told. David Icke. You'll see his name there. You can pre-order it now. I think it'll be out next week. I talked to David in email, and he told me what's in the book. Let me tell you, he has taken the gloves off when it comes to international Zionism. He's going after him. And it's been a long time coming. He's spent so many years, decades, watching, synthesizing. This is it. This book is going to shake people up. And it's about time that they are shaken up. David has been a leader for such a long time. We're beyond his old early axiom of problem, reaction, solution now. The people don't even need a problem to react to. They're just given the solution. They're just told what to do. They're told what's going to happen, and they accept it. And it's really sickening. Anyway, all right, Gary, let's get back to the narrative here. What do you got?
Yeah, I want to bring up the fact of that the automaton, that the two automatons that were activated, and I call them automatons.
Yeah.
The Muslim idiot that ran people over in New York City. Of course, again, no one questions why he drove up from Tampa to run people over in New York City when he could have just very well easily have done it in Tampa, Orlando, Miami, Atlanta.
You mean there are actually people down there that he could have run over? Oh, be darn.
Yeah. So, and then you have this guy yesterday.
That's question number one. Of course. What the hell did he drive to New York for if he wants to kill people? Absolutely.
And then now this guy went in and shot slaughtered people in that church.
Yeah.
First of all, I want to let everybody know what the Air Force is saying, that it was a clerical area, the clerical error, that there was some administrator that got lazy and didn't put his stuff in the system. That's a lie.
Okay, now what Gary's talking about, hold on. He's talking about the fact that this shooter was able to legally go and buy weapons, that the Air Force, even though he was dishonorably discharged with a court-martial, forgot to notify BATF or whomever that this guy was a nutcase. They forgot. No, doesn't happen.
No. Matter of fact, any court-martial, under the UCMJ, and I'm talking, this is all branches of service, but in the Air Force, they have a thing called the AFLETS, which is AFLETS. It's an acronym for Air Force Law Enforcement Terminal System. It's a computer system. The Marine Corps has it. I know. I know that for a fact. They got it. Navy has it, which is NCIS has it. Army Police Investigative Services has it. Everybody's got it. So what is that? As soon as you get a court-martial conviction, no matter what it is, goes into what they call this terminal system. Well, guess where does this terminal system do? Well, they automatically send this stuff directly to the NCIC, which is a National Criminal Database, which is basically, it stands for the NCIC, okay? Well, NCIC is the National Criminal Information Center, okay? That's where, which they call, when you do the weapons background check, okay, which is called...
Oh, hell, NICS. If they pull you over for a traffic stop, they'll often run you an NCIC, see if you got any warrants or anything.
So, NCIC, which is the main information hub for NICS, which is the National Instant Criminal Check, which is an instant background check, for buying guns, okay? There's no way that if this wasn't scrubbed out manually, there's no way that they didn't catch this. because it was automatically put in. First of all, it's a redundant system, because as soon as he went and did a year in the brig automatically does the same thing too, because anyone who goes in and out of a jail or any type of prison in the military, and I think this is the same way for civilian, their fingerprints get ran into and entered into NCIC as being a prisoner. And his charges of what he went to prison for is also entered into the NCIC. So there's no way. And then he went to a mental home, a military mental facility, which he supposedly escaped, which I don't buy that, because they're heavily secured. He escaped that and was bringing weapons in onto the base.
Oh, please.
So,
yeah, you know, when you go to buy a gun, Gary, correct me if I'm wrong, I don't know if these are national, but certainly in this state, there's like a 4 or 5 page form you got to go through. And one of them is, have you been dishonorably discharged from any branch of the military? That kind of stuff. It's all in the form.
Yeah. And the other thing they're claiming is, well, bad conduct, or what they call a big chicken dinner. That's what most, when you get a bad conduct discharge, it is not a step above dishonorable discharge. It is a dishonorable discharge. There's no difference. The military, they might call it dishonorable discharge, bad conduct discharge, but the military, when you get thrown out, does not deviate between the two. It's the same class of discharge. It's a dishonorable discharge. So again, for them to say, well, they didn't really give him a dishonorable discharge, they just gave him a bad conduct discharge. Well, that is a dishonorable discharge. So, again, when they're saying that, they're lying. So, so now you say to yourself is, okay, someone had to have gone to manually scrub that out of the system so he was able to go and have free reign to buy weapons. Why? Well, you can just answer that yourself.
MK Ultra or Monarch people, they got to have tools, right? If they're going to be taken off the shelf and sent out to kill people.
And see, that's why I use the word, which is perfect for an MK Ultra brainwashed person. It's an automaton.
Yeah, that is the perfect word. Yeah.
Because really, they go out, they're basically independent.
Mm-hmm.
And but they're under a certain control. Now, if you notice too, the James Holmes, when he did the Aurora shooting, and this guy, they were both fantasizing about the Joker. And Jared Loughner, when the guy who shot Gabby Giffords, was like to be involved with the Joker. And so this seems to be a trend. And they have this fantasized thing with the Joker.
Huh.
Well, I don't think it's more of a fantasy. I think the Joker is one of the focal points they use during brainwashing.
Interesting.
Because they have to have focal points.
Mm-hmm.
And a focal point is one of them is the Joker. So how do you activate these people? Anything. I mean, look, the fact of the matter is, another famous person was MK Ultra was Theodore Kaczynski, the Unabomber. Do you think the Unabomber was allowed to do what he did for all these years without some type of help? Come on. That guy went for years doing this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And he was MK Ultra. And that's what he was part of the experiments in the 1960s. So what do they do? So what you got to think about, how do you activate these people? It could be anything. Call up and just play a song to them over the phone. There's certain keywords they use in
anything.
A sequence.
You could get a phone call and you go, hello, and the keyword is immediately used, or a melody or whatever, and you're gone. You're gone. I mean, you're under their control. You're ready to take direction. You do what you're told, and then they take you out of it, and you have no recall. None of it.
And it's fractured personalities they use. This guy obviously was a prime candidate for this stuff.
Oh, God. Yeah.
A sane human being that beat the woman, beat the wife, the stepchild. He almost killed the stepchild. That was the type of guy he was. They knew it. It was very easy. So, matter of fact, when they did his programming, they also used the family as his focal point of his rage. Was the family.
Very smart.
So, which makes
very
no
smart.
Sense to go down to a church and you kill everybody in there to get back. If it was just, they're trying to sell it as he was mad at the in-laws. Well, people who are going to get that mad and angry, how many domestic cases where the guy goes to the house, he shoots one of the family members because he's mad, and then the police get him. You hear it all the time here in town because the number one reason for murder in Las Vegas, people don't know this, is domestic violence.
Domestics,
okay?
Yeah.
It's domestic cases. Mm-hmm. But they're not going and slaughtering the whole church because they were mad at the mother-in-law. They don't do that. And so it doesn't even fit the profile of a person who is just mad about the in-laws. That's what they're trying, but that's what they are pushing right now.
Right.
They're pushing that. If you look at the news tonight or in the past few days, he was mad at the in-laws. That's why he had to go kill everybody. That's why they said he wanted to go kill everyone. But that's not it at all. This case here in Las Vegas, I've been saying, they keep redoing the news cycle. It has to be refreshed. Muslim guy 1 week, Harvey Weinstein 1 week, Kevin Spacey another day, Muslim guy running people over in 1 week.
Russiagate, don't forget Russiagate, Hillary.
Yeah, the Russiagate, the Hillary dossier, on and on.
You're right.
And one story after another, North Korea, we're going to go, we're not going to go, we're going to do this, we're not going to do this, and then this one, that, it's keeping everything but the focus on this. Again, you say to yourself, it's like, why such the need to really get the attention off from this? I believe this was a part of a much bigger piece of a puzzle. I believe the Las Vegas shooting was a very, very small part of a bigger operation, and they just don't want people looking on why the planning happened for this shooting. Because we've covered how the shooting went down, how everything. It's pretty obvious at this point. There was multiple shooters. We know that. I mean, for anyone that's still, if people are still walking around thinking there wasn't multiple shooters, well, again, you know, they got their head up their ass. Because there's no, come on, at this point, it's safe to say there was that, it was well planned, it was highly involved. Now we need to figure out why did it go down the way it did? Why the pressure? I mean, you're talking major pressure, more than just a little bit of saving the Las Vegas economy, which is dead. Like, you know, because the fact of the matter is, people have to understand, the Jewish power, the Zionists that run the finance of this town, they've been mopping up red for years. They've written the city off as just a tourist economy. What are they making their money on in this town, which is now is laundering?
Money laundering.
The VIG, and the VIG they take, and don't forget, the way they operate, they don't do nothing for nothing. And these people take a VIG and they take a percentage, a point off every dollar they wash. So that is big money. And they'll keep this town crawling if they have to, just enough to be able to keep the laundering operation going. And so there's got to be, the Zionists had to been promised a much bigger, whatever.
Something's up. You got it. Something's up. Something big is up.
Yep.
Something real big. I don't know what it is.
It's scary because what's scary is that if there were, look, again, people can't, well, why would they do it? You cannot think like they do. And this is one thing, and you brought up David Icke. Now, this is where I learned this years ago when he was on a show that I used to work on.
Yeah.
And he said, never. When he says, when I tell people this, he always would say this, never try to be in the mindset of the people, of them people, because they're not like you. You know, you would say, well, I would never go out and kill 58 people. Yet you wouldn't. But that's not them. Them people, these type of people that plan and do this stuff have no regard for life. They can extinguish millions of people. Look at what goes on in Palestine on a daily basis.
Well, look at World War II. 80 million? Who knows? 100 million? Yeah.
Who knows?
They don't care.
And we went all out, sacrificed millions, you know, thousands of our soldiers back then to save because of 6 million, so they say, which is a complete laugh. Obviously, that's not true. I mean, we don't even know what the number is about these supposed amount of Jews that were killed. But we sided with a country that verifiably killed almost 100 million of their own people. Now, so what do
Uncle
you say?
Uncle Joe.
Yeah. So what was the United States policy at that time saying? That the Jewish life was a lot more important than the Russian life. That's what it says.
Mm-hmm.
Because we're willing to work with a country that we knew killed 100 million of their own people. But that 100 million, who gives a crap about them? What our story is, we need to go save because the Jews are being slaughtered, but the Russians be damned. And so,
That's the type of mindset
you're dealing with.
You're not
dealing with a normal mindset.
No.
And people just, the public in this country think they are, and you're
not. I can't wait to see David's book. David, it took, I think, last summer to get, he didn't ever really want to go where he is. He's really learned a lot. What they did to him last summer on his tour was so ugly, so typical of them. He was only able to speak twice in Canada. And now,
the harassment he had at the airport.
I have his
Facebook feed and his Twitter feed.
Uh-huh.
So the times he was showing when he was going into British Columbia and up in Vancouver, the airport, the harassment,
that's one of the two places he was able to speak in British Columbia, so I remember it.
This book is going to be
phenomenal. I think this is going to be an absolutely awesome book. We'll find out. He's going to be on Thursday, so we'll learn more. But he's no holds barred now. He's letting it out. And it's time. It's time. You know, you talk about World War II. I don't like the U.S. or the World Red Cross. But the Red Cross said in 1947, they did a thorough study of World War II. And they said in all the German labor camps, around 250,000 people died. These are political prisoners, gypsies, Jews, homosexuals, 250,000 and most of it from typhus. That's what the Red Cross says.
By the way, Jeff, that would have been the most accurate measurement and accurate count.
That's right.
Because that was right after the war had ended.
That's right.
It was from the International Red Cross. It wasn't the anti-Semite, which is their favorite silly word, you know, with their stupid labels. You know, how you know someone doesn't have an argument? They attack the person, calling them names, but they never
address the argument.
Try to counteract the information.
No.
They never do that.
No.
They always just attack the person, and they're really good at that.
Don't forget Rabbi Michael Dov Wiesmandl, Wiesmandl. Rabbi Wiesmandl was one of the most powerful rabbis in Germany. He worked a deal out with the German government in 1942, I think it was 43, that all he needed to do was go to World Zionist headquarters and come up with $3 million U.S., it's probably $35 million now, and all the Jews in occupied Europe would have been shown harmlessly to the Spanish border and turned loose into Spain. That Germans wanted them out. They didn't want to kill them. They wanted them out. Well, Wiesmandl took this deal from the German government to World Zionist headquarters. It's in his book. You can read it. In Switzerland. And they said, oh, sorry, Rabbi. Go home. You're not getting any money from us because unless a lot of Jews suffer and die during the war, we won't be able to make our case for Palestine as easily as we expect after the war. So they let their own people die and suffer during the war. They wouldn't come up with the money. These are Jews sacrificing Jews. It's in Rabbi Wiesmandl's book. It's called 10 Questions to the Zionists. Look it up. It's there.
Well, see, they don't mind. Like I said, just, if you want to know how they are with each other, just look at Bernie Madoff. They get off on it. They think it's funny. They think it's a joke. And so, of course, they used all these civil things to set up the supposedly now which is going to be the greater Israel. That's what they want. And you know, I'm afraid. Especially for the Iranians, because I guarantee you they are on the hit list more than North Korea's. Look, they fell into the trap of signing that agreement, and that agreement was one big trap because they're going to use that agreement against them in the future.
Yeah, if they're
no matter how they live by it, it doesn't matter. Somehow find a loophole and say, yep, you violated it, now we're going to...
Oh, it's already been basically conversationally done. If we were going to take Iran out, we're going to have to go on the ground to do it, and that isn't going to go over well with the American people. Although I don't know if the American people have much of a backbone. Same thing with North Korea. We can't take them out. unless we go in on the ground. It won't happen.
Which is why you have Trump running around saying, let's nuke them, let's nuke them. Because that's going to be the popular decision. Because I guarantee you that's what they're going to sell. And how the American public would stand for that is just abhorrent. Because you open that box of using nuclear weapons,
right.
My Lord. I mean, you've got to understand, it's insanity. It's just beyond insanity.
It's worse. I
can't believe it.
We don't have enough words to adequately quantify how insane it is. It's that bad. All right, so there we go. All right, you're updated. We're going to keep on it. I'll have that video up tomorrow morning showing that helicopter. You make your own decision. I'm not telling you it's real or not. I'm telling you here it is. And sometimes things are exactly what they look like. Okay? All right. Thanks, Gary, very much.
You have a good evening.
Okay, you too. Gary Holland, and we'll be right back with you tomorrow night. And do it again. Take care.